Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the channel. My name is Jacob Restituto. I'm a musician from Northport, New York, and today we have the absolute pleasure of having Leah Haywood here on the channel. I'm incredibly honored to have the conversation with her and have a great conversation coming up with her. So thank you so much for taking the time. If you have not heard of her, she has done incredible things in Australia and here in America, working with some great artists. In addition to making some phenomenal music on her own, she also is a co-partner in Dreamlab Productions. They are songwriters and producers for many artists as well.
Hi, Jacob.
I appreciate you taking the time. Thank you so much. How are you?
Thanks for having me. I'm great. Really good. Yeah. How about you?
I'm doing wonderful. Can you go into a little bit more depth into all the introductions that I just gave you? Because you wear a lot of hats. So
for people that
might not know who you are, could you just give a little introduction?
So I actually started my career as an artist in Australia on Sony. Had a couple of big hits there. Then moved to America, kind of started slowing down in Australia. I wanted to kind of, you know, take it overseas, conquer bigger territories, all that kind of stuff. And was coming to pursue the artistry and fell into writing and producing for other people. Various things kind of, there was a lot of potential signings that were going to happen, and then label acquisitions happened, and for one reason or another didn't go as planned, but kind of did go as planned. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
It was kind of perfect the way it all worked out. So fell into writing and producing for other people. The first project we worked on was me and my partner in Dreamlab, Dan. We worked on Ali and AJ, and that all came through Craigslist, actually. We were doing Craigslist We were doing Craigslist demos for like $250 a track just to make ends meet. You know, it's like we knew what we wanted to do and we were going to do whatever it takes to get there. And we didn't have a time frame. You know, a lot of people move to LA and give themselves 5 years for things to get cracking. And if it doesn't, they give up. And it just wasn't even a thing. You know, it's like, this is what we're doing. Rain, hail, or shine. That's what's happening.
100%.
So we started doing Craigslist demos. And then, you know, through various people hearing it, got into the hands of one person, then got into someone else's hands. And then eventually got into the hands of this like huge TV composer. Who ended up hearing it and was like, whoa, who wrote and produced these songs? And he ended up signing us and also asked us to, as artists, and also asked us to develop one of the three acts that he had signed. And one of those acts was Ali and AJ. I don't know if you're familiar with
sure,
them.
Sure, sure, sure.
Everybody's childhood soundtrack, basically.
Yeah.
So
well, I noticed that you worked with a lot of my childhood soundtracks, so.
Yep, true story. So basically, yeah, we developed them, got, you know, the songs that we did, got them a deal with Hollywood Records, and then we did 8 of the 12 songs on the record, and it went on to sell a million copies, and we had our first top 40 radio hit in America. And from there, we got really good management who represented us and just got us a bunch of gigs, and that's how it all kind of rolled on from there. And I think, you know, like once an artist, always an artist kind of thing. I always had the bug. I always knew that one day I would do my own record again. I just didn't know when. I didn't know how. And I was quite happy doing what I was doing. So I was just going to let it play out as it played out. And then I think, I was driving in Australia one day. We were over there on holiday and I was driving and it was like, I just got this thought, it's time. It's time to do a record. And so New York was the first song that was written, which you were talking about.
Yeah,
that was,
shout out to New York.
Yeah, shout out to New York. I didn't really know. I knew that I wanted to do something unique, like original to me sonically and musically, but I didn't know what that sounded like. I just knew I had all, you know, I'm classically trained on the piano. I have all these kind of musical influences. And I knew that I wanted to kind of be in a certain kind of wheelhouse, but I didn't know how it was going to sound, like in terms of programming and whether it was going to be live drums, program drums, like I just, you know, didn't know. And New York came to me and the production came to me. And I remember being on holiday in Palm Springs and just like all of the production ideas were coming to me and I was just like dictating. I was just sitting by the pool, like just going, okay, kick comes in here, snare comes in there, bring strings in the pre-chorus, da-da-da-da-da, bass line is this, da-da-da. And I was just dictating the production and then I got home and I started producing it up. And that was the first track on the record. And then that kind of created the sonic landscape, I guess, and just my approach to production. And it's also the first time that I've produced something alone. like my whole career has been collaborating with other producers and writers. And I really, it was like a something I wanted to check off my, you know, my bucket list. Like I want to do something completely autonomous and with no other influences, no other writers in the room, just to prove I can do it, really, because there's a lack of female producers. And I also wanted that to be part of the story, you know, like she produces, it's not just she's doing the vocal production, which I feel like a lot of people assume if there's a guy and a girl production duo, they assume the guy's taking more the masculine roles of plugging shit in, doing the drum programming, you know, playing the more masculine instruments per se. So I kind of wanted to make sure that wasn't diluted, that I can do all that stuff too. And, you know, so yeah, then I ended up signing to Kygo's label, Palm Tree Records, which is through Sony Worldwide. So it was kind of Sony 2.0 for me, which was really awesome. And dropped my second album ever in my life, June of this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's some phenomenal tracks on it.
Thank you.
Absolutely. 100%. So I want to even take it a little farther back than you took it. So you kind of started the story where you started already getting some traction in the music industry in Australia. And I would like, part of my goal with these conversations is when I think so many artists start out or have the desire to start out, there's this notion of it's impossible to make it in the music industry. And one thing I want to piggyback on is that you and your Dreamlab partner mentioned the fact like there was rain, shine, sleet or snow, right? You're going to do it. There was no timeline. And as an artist myself, I relate to that tremendously because I was just speaking to somebody recently and they was like, we were talking about goals and stuff. And I'm like, man, one of the questions I've always hated is like, oh, where do you see yourself in 5 years? I'm like, I have no idea, but I know that I'll still be doing this. You know what I mean? And it's like this like concept of like a lot of it's out of my control. You know, it's a lot of it's you chug along and these opportunities present themselves. But I can't say, oh, I know in 6 months and 3 days, this opportunity is going to present itself to me. Exactly. That's really, you know, so I relate to that a lot for sure. And I thought that was a really phenomenal comment. But so I've always wanted to encourage other artists that are starting out because it's tough and there's not a lot of direction. So like hearing the stories of artists of kind of their beginnings of, okay, you were 15 and like, for example, you know, like how did you get to where you were able to even come to America because you had the success in Australia?
So I started learning piano when I was 7, right? And my mum, actually probably 6, and my mum discovered I had perfect pitch around that age. My
sister was, a blessing and a curse, as they say, right?
Right, exactly. Because I can't play. If you transpose a keyboard, I can't play it. My brain does not compute. I have to hear every note as it is. You know what I mean? And I always know when someone's transposed a keyboard. I'm like, you're freaking lazy, you know? Learn the black keys, man. Learn the black keys.
Yeah, I hear you. That's too funny.
Right. And so my sister was next door in the room next door hitting random notes on the piano and I was yelling out the notes. And so mum was like, okay, there's something here. I'm not going to, you know, like most kids, they get bored. They want to quit piano. My mum said, there's no chance. You're going all the way with this. And she understood the grind of like how many hours you have to practice a day when you're sitting your exams and all that kind of stuff. So she said, just get by doing the minimum. I don't care, but you're not going to stop learning. So I'm obviously very grateful that she pushed me like that. And then I left school early as a dropout, wasn't cut out for school.
High school or college or university?
Well, actually high school.
Wow.
Dropped out of high school. Wow. In Australia, you can leave 1 year before you graduate. Is that the same here? You can drop out, right?
Yeah, you can drop out for sure. I mean, you could drop out at any point, but like most people typically don't.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I hated school. Sure. And I got two girls. They both hate school. I'm like, yep, totally there with you. And funny enough, I'm the youngest of three girls and I was the only one to get a university degree. So basically, I went from dropping out to going to the Conservatorium of Music, which is based on audition and obviously musical knowledge. So I got accepted and I did a 2-year course and graduated from university. Wow. I mean, I think the school system sucks and I think there's so many kids that aren't cut out for it. And so I'm kind of an advocate of like, don't judge someone that hasn't necessarily got the highest level of education because they may have a whole other level of genius that has been untapped, you know?
I mean, you're talking to a college dropout. I didn't drop out of high school like you did, but I dropped out of college to do music. So
exactly, any kind of dropout, man, sure. Like all about it. So my kind of plan. I already had the musical training. I was already writing my own songs at this point. But I didn't know anyone, and I feel like the industry is so much, like, way more than anything based on relationship. It's based on being in the right rooms, right place, right time. It's not always based on talent. There are so many incredibly talented people that will never see the light of day because they don't get to walk into the right room at the right time. And so that was kind of my MO going to university and to the conservatorium. I needed to rub shoulders with other musicians. I needed to start playing out. I needed to meet the, you know, the guy who ran my course to see if he had any connections and da-da-da. So I have a bit of a business and creative mind. The two work hand in hand. So I had this plan that in my second year, I was going to do a demo CD halfway through my second year, give myself 6 months to send it out to all the labels and get myself a deal. So I got the music directory, this big thick book, and I basically did a demo CD, which my parents funded, and I sent my demo out to all the labels, and I got a call back from Sony.
Wow.
And I had actually I got a call back from a few labels, but also at the same time, I basically was asked to, through the guy that was running my course, he said, can you come and support this comedian in her show? She incorporates music into her show. So I did that as well. And on the last night, a production crew from the same, like the equivalent of Saturday Night Live, came to her show to audition her to be on their show. And the guy that was there was like, hey, I loved what you did. You know, what are you doing? I said, I just did a demo. He said, send it to me. I sent it to him. He said, 2 weeks later, got back to me, said, we're going to fly you out and get you to sing on the show. Wow. So that's kind of like SNL getting a complete no name to go on their show and sing a cover. That's what I did. It had never been done, and I don't think it ever happened ever again. But I went on and I sang Midnight at the Oasis, and halfway through my song, the biggest producer in Australia at the time that was doing all the Sony projects walked into his apartment, turned the TV on. It was halfway through my song, and he called the station the next day, said, I want to work with her. She's amazing. I fly out to Sydney. I finished my course. In January, I fly to Sydney because I graduated December. January, fly to Sydney, work with him for 2 weeks. He takes me into Sony, the chairman. I showcase for the chairman, and he signs me on the spot.
Wow. Very interesting because, like you said, it's all about, obviously, talent is a factor of it for sure, of course. But, like, it is so much of like, the creating the right relationship with the right people. And it's
really
how you had the kind of the foresight to see that, you know, like, between the connections of your professor and or the course director, and, you know, very, very interesting.
Exactly. Like, just one thing leads to another. And had I not put myself in that situation, I didn't really want to go and study for 2 years, to be honest. I was like, it's a waste of time. Like, I know what I'm doing, just, you know. But the thing is, you have to start somewhere, and you have to start small and let one thing lead to another. And I think that's, you know, a lot of people just want to go straight for, like, the big guns, and I think you just have to, it's a process, you know, you have to let the process unfold and be patient, you know.
Absolutely. So, I was doing a little research, and you've been in the game for, you've definitely put your time in for sure. So people see, you know, I think so often people see where they want to be and the careers that other people have and say, I would love to be, you know, where Leah is at the moment, or, you know, and they don't realize, I mean, the 20 years that you've put in at this point, you know.
Yeah, and also, you know, I was a number one pop star in Australia, left there and came here and did demos for $20.
Yeah, you were searching Craigslist. Like, wow, yeah, you're right.
It's like, I can't be entitled. I'm not entitled to anything. Like, I've got to put the work in, you know. So
100%.
I think that's so important. And entitlement's a huge issue, you know, with people these days, you know, that it's just like, I don't know. I feel like an entitled attitude is just not going to serve you, you know?
Sure. Exactly. And like you mentioned, again, coming back to the relationships that you developed through doing the demos created a whole other door for relationships after the fact.
Totally. And also, it took a different path to what I thought it was going to take. And rather than being down on myself and going, you know, all these deals fell through. I was just like, all right, this door's opening. I'll just walk through and see what happens. And then several years later, it all comes back around full circle exactly in the time that it was meant to. Because the thing is, like, I had to live all this life to create narrative to write about. You know, I didn't write songs in my 20s like I do now. You know what I mean? Like, I would, it wasn't really life experience when I, you know, I mean, I know a lot of people do write from life experience. I wasn't really writing from life experience in my 20s. I was just writing good pop songs. But now it's like, this is my story.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. 100%, man. It's so, everything happens for a reason, you know, whether people want to believe it or not.
it really does. Living from a philosophical perspective, I really do believe in that, you know?
Absolutely. So yeah. I want to piggyback on something that you just mentioned, and it's the age old question that there really is no answer to. So I want to hear your perspective, just in the sense that you've written a lot of songs and you've written a lot of songs that have done really well. How do you define a good song or a good pop song, as you had just mentioned? What's a good song to you?
I mean, a good song to me is a song that gets me, that like, you know what I mean? I listen to it, and it can even be an up-tempo song. It's just got to have an emotional pull, like some kind of emotional hook for me. Now, not everyone listens to music that way. That's why music's so subjective. Like, I've played some of what I feel like my most emotional, leave my gut on the stage songs are, and the person listening in the studio will go, "That's really nice." And I'm like, "I want to die. Oh my gosh. How can it, nice. That's not it. Please don't use that word." You know what I mean? And it's like, I take it so personally, but you know, everyone listens to music differently. For me, I used to really focus on melody. I didn't really care about the lyric. There's two different schools of thought. I feel like when you really win is when the melody and the lyric come together perfectly. But then Quincy Jones would say it's all about the melody. No one knows the lyrics to half of Michael Jackson's songs. You know what I mean? And he would say that it's all about the melody. So beat it, you know, like no one knows all of those lyrics. You know what I mean?
Which is an interesting argument, because if you go back to some of the like music just in general, it wasn't until probably more recently that we had music with lyrics. Like, you know, like everybody knows Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, like how it goes, you know what I mean? But like there's no lyrics there. It's a melody. So that is an interesting argument to be made, that the melody is, it could be more than considered more important, but whether it actually is or not. But like you mentioned, though, like now that we have actual lyrics in there, the combination and the connection between the two.
And I think simplicity, like if you listen to ABBA, if you listen to the Beatles, like their songs, the message is so simple, so universal. You know, then you have other songs like Adele will sing, you know, Someone Like You, and it's so personal to her. Like it's not quite as universal because it's like so personal to her story, but then people can kind of make it their own story. So, and yeah, it kind of, honestly, I don't think there's one shape or size to what makes a great song. I think so, you just know when you've got something special, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And majority of the time I don't write something special. You don't write special songs every day. Not Max Martin, not Dr. Luke, not like no one writes special songs every day. You know what I mean? But it takes the crap songs to get to those songs.
100%.
Even the shitty songs shouldn't be overlooked. They're serving a purpose, because without those songs in between, you're not on that journey to get to that song that's going to be the big one.
Absolutely. You know what I mean? Absolutely. I heard an artist quote once where they were essentially saying, like, songwriting is like turning on the faucet, and sometimes that faucet hasn't been on in a while. So sometimes, you know, like you get a little bit of the muddy water that comes through, but every once in a while you get a little spat of the good water. And then the more that you leave that on, the cleaner the water gets, obviously you become a better songwriter. But that's also to say, like, don't disregard your songwriting in the beginning, because every once in a while you'll still get a gem. You know, even as a beginner songwriter, there's still plenty of songs that you'll write a lot more bad songs, but you will have a gem every once in a while.
Totally. Yeah. And I think, like, you know, I do a lot of rooms with other writers, you know, like there's usually there's usually 3 to 4 people in a room, including the producer, when I do a session. And there's a moment, hopefully there's a moment in that session where everyone goes, yes. Mm-hmm. Everyone feels it simultaneously, and that's when you know you've got something. Then you have to track it. And tracking it is like, okay, that's when you really see if that yes was right.
Mm-hmm.
When you start tracking the vocal, that's the moment of truth. And quite often you'll track it and you'll go, nah, it's not feeling right. And everyone will feel the same way. You know what I mean? So it's like everyone getting on the same page.
Sure.
Like with the Katy Perry song, with Never Really Over, we wrote the bridge 6 times.
Mm-hmm.
And we tracked it every time. We tracked the leads, we doubled the leads, we tracked the BVs, we did the full production for each
wow.
6 incarnations of the bridge. And the 6th one, we were like, that's it. That's the one.
In your songwriting process are these songs being written in just groups of people, like, and then they're sent to artists, or are you often writing in the room with these artists?
Most of the time it's with other writers and producers, honestly. I find that the best songs are not written with the artist in the room.
Sure.
Every now and then it is. It's with an artist and the artist is just on fire or whatever, or you can just really pull the narrative out of the artist and there's this great synergy. But quite often, not to be rude, but quite often an artist can be the weak link, but they want their voice to be the loudest.
Sure.
And it's a really hard line to walk. I know it could be come across as offensive, but it's true. A lot of artists don't have the writing experience. Now, there are some artists that are absolutely prolific and unbelievable. Don't get me wrong. But there's a lot of artists that are signed to labels, and I find that the majority of them that come through are not quite where the rest of the writers in the room are. But because of ego or whatever, they want their voice to be the loudest. And then it's a really hard line for the writers and producers to walk, because we don't want to shut them down. We want to indulge their creativity, of course, but
it's affecting the quality.
It's a hard line to walk. Yeah,
that's very interesting.
Yeah, you know, and the thing is, you want to be back in the room with them. So you're like, long shit, they're not going to work with us again.
It's bad that they're not going to work with you again.
Well, my thing is, if we kind of like massage them away from their idea and into something better,
sure.
And the song ends up on their record and becomes a hit, of course they're going to work with us again.
Yeah.
So I feel like, but you have to do it very gently.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, you just have to be, it's a real skill.
100%. It's a people skill for sure. Absolutely,
it
man.
Is.
Absolutely. It is very interesting, especially the arts and the creativity. It's different. You're not an accountant essentially where it's like, hey, these are the numbers. The fact is something's off here. Like it's somebody's baby that they feel like, hey, I poured my heart and soul. This is my breakup song. You know, you're taking a, you know,
yep.
And now you're telling me it sucks. Is, you know, people, you got to say that very
exactly.
gently.
Exactly. And because it's subjective, you can't say that you're right. You can't 100%. Say that you're absolutely, it's not 2 + 2 = 4. It's like, it's a very gray area of
absolutely.
Like what, you know, and yeah, so I think I prefer for the most part working with writers and producers that I know and love. I've got like a few people that I just like being in the room with on a regular basis. I used to go out and meet a lot of new people and be in different rooms every day meeting someone and then having to write a song. And I just like, I'm kind of at the stage now where I want to work with the people that I love.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Find that nice groove.
Absolutely. I want to piggyback on what we were just talking about with the artist being in the room and everything. And I think that, a strong trait I think most artists could hopefully learn is the fact of like that you don't have to be the best at everything, you know, like they could be a phenomenal singer, but they don't just to think that they're a phenomenal singer and you know, whatever, a great stage presence doesn't mean that they have to be a great songwriter and acknowledging
totally.
The fact that you're not going to be great at everything means you can bring people onto your team, like a team of great songwriters to really help just bring everything to the level and acknowledge
exactly.
your strengths and weaknesses.
Exactly. Like it's a strength to actually hang back. I mean, sometimes in a session, sometimes in a session, like I can go into a session and be the alpha. I can run it. I can get on the keys. I can come up with the concept. I can, you know, start a melody vibe. But if someone else is on fire, I also can hang back. And it's like, you need to know when to hang back. And if you're an artist that can kind of like, okay, I need to hang back now that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I can hang, you know.
So in your experience, do you find that artists don't have a problem connecting the songs that they haven't written? That if they're gifted a song or ghost written a song, the audience connects to it the same way as if they were in the room?
There's two different types of artists. Some people have to have it autobiographically correct for where they're at in life. And then there's other artists that just love a sick song and they're like, yeah, love it.
Very interesting.
But not everyone has to sing from their own perspective, but there are, it's kind of 50-50. Yeah. Then there's other artists that, you know, and also we live in the world now of like 50% of the artists are DJs, aren't they? So
sure.
DJs don't really...
Yeah, it's a very interesting perspective, yeah.
You know, their reference for a track will be like, we just want happy, you know, yeah. we want a positive thing, but they're not like, it's not nothing autobiographical, you know? So you've got a whole other area of songs that you can pitch to that don't need to be specific to a story, which is kind of great for songwriters, you know?
Are you often writing with songwriters or with artists in mind, or are you writing just the song and then you pitch it out to people?
I kind of like writing with an artist in mind personally, but a lot of writers don't like doing that. Mm-hmm. So
what's your school of thought in that? Or why do you like doing that?
I like writing with an artist in mind because I picture them singing it. I hear their voice. I know what kind of melodies would suit their voice. I know what kind of range the melody needs to be for their voice. And I think that I just work well like that, having a focal point. But then also it can put an unnecessary pressure on the writing session to have to like beat a song that they've already had. And so at the same time, I also like doing sessions where there is no preconceived ideas, no reference. There's no, you know, you're not getting any, what do they call it when they're, I don't know, when you get given an artist and the references of the songs they kind of want to
sure,
do.
Sure,
I don't know.
Sure.
I forget what the word is, but I'm only drinking decaf. It's not real coffee.
That's funny. Every time you take a sip of coffee, though, I'm craving my coffee. I'm like, oh, I got to go get a cup of coffee.
Oh, sorry.
No, you're good. You go. I got my water. I'm like, yeah, I need a cup of coffee. This is not cutting it right now.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think they can actually stifle a session. It goes both ways, honestly. You know,
Is the songwriting process different for you as an artist when you're writing for somebody else or like just writing to pitch out versus when you're writing for yourself?
Completely different. Like I'm not the same person when I'm writing for other people because I'm less connected to what I'm writing about. And I also think there's a lot more scrutinizing of the idea when you're writing with three or four people in the room because everyone's kind of got different ideas about where the chord should go, about where the melody should go, da da da. I work very quickly on my own stuff. I don't second guess things.
Really?
I haven't really ever sat down and said, I'm going to write a song for myself today. I haven't you know, played some chords and then try to come up with a melody. I usually have an idea before I go into the studio and then I just start tracking it and I start kind of singing gibberish on the mic and then certain lyrics are popping out and da da. And I don't question if it feels right. I don't question it.
Which is very interesting because I feel like that's kind of the opposite of what most artists are. They're way more critical of their own self-work than they are working for other people.
Exactly. And I think sometimes, like, for example, if I'm in a co-writing session and I'm throwing out a melody idea, I'm hearing, because I'm a producer, I'm hearing all the BVs behind it. I'm hearing the full production. Now, they're not all hearing it. So they might be like, not sure about that. But when it's myself in the studio and I throw out a melody, I'm like, I know what I can do with this. I know how I can pull the track in to make it become what it needs to be. And so I think that's why my favorite thing is working on my own in the studio on my own stuff, because there's no boundaries. I can I can be crazy as I want, and I love that.
Is that what we can expect? A lot more Haywood music?
Oh, definitely. Yep. I'm going to start working on my second album pretty soon, and I've got a couple of like songs in with other people that I'm going to feature on and all that.
Very cool. It's very exciting. Well, I want to be respectful of your time, and I know you got a lot going on, so thank you so much. But the last question I'd like to ask everybody is, what is one thing that you currently know now in your career that you wish you knew when you first started off?
I think going back to that living philosophically, I used to get pretty impatient and go, why isn't it happening? Frustrated, you know, like I'm banging on a closed door. Like, what's going on? You know, like if only these people knew, you know what I mean? And I think I've settled down a lot, you know, going through a lot of life experience. There's a lot of highs and lows in this business. You get way more no's than yeses. You have to have a really thick skin. And having stuck with it for so long and experienced all of those highs and lows, I live a lot more calmly, I think, and a lot more like, okay, if it didn't happen, it'll find the right home. If the song's good enough, it'll find the right home. And just kind of being confident and calm and not letting the losses get to you too much, not letting it, you know, just say, you know, like writing a shit song, you know, well, it happened, whatever. I don't stress anymore if it's not going well in the studio. Sure. I used to get really uptight if we were writing a song and no one was feeling it and I wasn't feeling it. And it was like, this is a waste of a day, you know, but I don't do that anymore. I just go, am I having fun? Am I with people I love? Is this the best job ever? Yes. You know, just looking at all the positives and just going, it's going to happen when it's going to happen. Yeah. You know, it's like the Justin Bieber song was sitting there for a year. You know, we pitched it to everyone. No one took it. And then one day we got a call, Justin heard it. He's cutting it tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Right? And so it wasn't for lack of quality on that song. It just didn't hit the right person at the right time. You know what I mean? And so, yeah.
If you have time for one last piggyback question on that, I'd love to hear your thoughts on how you know when to stop pushing a song because it's not good or it's just not the right time yet. Like, how do you find that balance of that?
If I really believe in a song, I never stop pushing.
Sure. Okay. That's an easy answer for sure.
If I'm like, nah, they're wrong. They're just wrong. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I don't know why they're not hearing it, you know, but I will always circle back to songs. And sometimes songs have been sitting there for 3 or 4 years and we're like, this is still an amazing song. Mm-hmm. We'll come back to it and we might reproduce it to make it more current. You know what I mean? Like, you've got to keep it in the current.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, so I wouldn't just let a song die if it's that good. I would just try and keep revisiting it. And there's new artists popping up all the time. You know what I mean? New artists getting signed all the time that are looking for great songs. And so if you've exhausted the current roster, you know, then there's going to be someone new tomorrow that you can put a song to. But not every song is like that. Some songs you need to live and let die. You know what
I mean? Like you said, if it's meant to happen, it'll happen some way or another.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for taking the time. For people to go definitely check out all the, there'll be links in the description for people to definitely check out all the stuff that you are currently working on your own music. So thank you so much. Have a wonderful rest of your day. And if you could hang on for 30 seconds, I want to say big thank you to every single person that's watched this and made it to the end of this video. You guys rock. Definitely go check out Haywood's music and all her social media links and subscribe to this channel. I'll see you in the next video. God bless and peace out.